My main starting point would be perturbation theory in general. So, and suppose, let me denote some physical observable which I can expand in some small parameter, and I used E because I will be mostly talking about energy levels in some quantum mechanical systems. Let me write formally some Cn g to the n, where g is my small parameter. And typically in many problems in physics, what happens is that this series is an asymptotic series, and the large order growth looks something like so n maybe some beta, and I put 2 here, n plus beta, and some coefficient, which I will explain what the physical meanings of these coefficients are. And there are some subleading terms, 2si by n beta minus 1 is 1, and so on. So this is a typical behavior of some typical perturbation series. So, and this kind of behavior is, as I said, is very very common. It happens in you see these sorts of expansions in quantum mechanics, in quantum field theory, string theory, topological string theory, matrix models, hydrodynamics. Where the expansion is a derivative expansion, and the small parameter is something called the Knudsen number, which basically measures the ratio of the microscopic scale to macroscopic scale, and so on. For example, starting from quantum mechanics, some examples. I won't write all these. For example, Stark effect. If you have an atom, and you put the atom in the electric field and look at the spectral splittings, it's the Stark effect and the late term behavior, something like this. The Zeeman effect, similarly, double well potential, cubic oscillator, cosine potential, which I will concentrate on later in the talk, and so on. From quantum field theory, I would like to give, for example, one example, which is the if you take some scalar field or spinners and apply a constant electric field to it and compute the effective action, that's known as the Euler-Heisenberg effective action. The late term behavior. So this is an expansion in small field, electric field divided by the mass of the electron, or the scalar, and the behavior looks like this: minus one to the n plus one, some numbers which are not very important, two n plus one. And pi to the 2n plus 4, and Riemann zeta function 2n plus 4. So this is an example. This is another Heisenberg. This minus 1 to the n, this oscillatory factor only exists for a magnetic field and does not exist for only if the field is a magnetic field and not an electric field. There are similar examples to this. You take a scalar, put it into, for example, the Sitter space, and calculate the effective action. Now the expansion parameter is the radius of curvature. You have a similar behavior, similarly in the Sitter space. Anti-de Sitter space, and so on and so forth. So my point of giving these examples is that they're pretty common.
Which
This is the effective action, which is basically the free energy of the theory. The Cn asymptotic to so about where sorry. I will explain this. I will explain what these are. Yes. Yeah, there's a reason why I gave it a particular name. Yes. So these are all examples. This is some generic behavior. This shows up in many examples, like as I said, like double well, cubic oscillator, quartic oscillator, Matthew, this is a particular example from quantum field theory where you look at the partition function, sorry, the effective action under a constant electric field or a magnetic field. I think this is for this spinner case. QED with electric field. For a scalar, there's a similar expression, but the details are slightly different, but the form is the same. Yeah, this is the spinner case. One way to deal with such asymptotic expansions is, well, I'll continue here, is to do a Borel-Lewis summation, as was explained several times. So you define the Borel transform of this series. So this is a function of a variable that I call S. It was just basically divide every term by n factorial. So now this series behave much better than this series. And in fact, it's generally has a finite radius of convergence. And then the Borel-Lewis summation of the Borel-Lewis summed expression for my original asymptotic series is basically 1 over g, an integral in Borel plane e to the Borel transform of my observable. So if I'm interested in the behavior, so typically these coefficients are real. If I'm interested in the behavior of this function for real coupling constants, this contour is basically from 0 to infinity. But in general, I can define a Borel transform as an integral over some ray. But in this talk, I will keep this theta infinitesimally small, but not zero, because it's going to be important. One obstacle which typically occurs with some of these examples that I gave is that the Borel transform, this Borel transform, has singularities along the integration path that along this path. And in that case, typically, I end up with an ambiguity, because an imaginary ambiguity. So this is this is the S plane. I want to integrate over the real axis, but there's some singularity. For simplicity, let me assume that it's a pole. Generically, these are branch cuts. At some location, the same number appears here. And then now I can go either above or I can go below. But in either case, I will pick up some imaginary part. And that imaginary part imaginary part of the Borel, we sum the E, G, will be at the order as 2i over g. And if so, this is for beta equals 0. If there is some beta, non-zero beta, in the large order growth, I have some factor of g to the beta with a coefficient. Actually, this coefficient, right. This coefficient is precisely this coefficient here. With an imaginary part, probably I messed up with some I, but it's not very important. Okay. Then what does this imaginary part mean? In certain examples that I gave, for example, the Euler-Heisenberg, with an electric field. So for electric field, this factor is not there. And in fact, there's a singularity here. I tried to do Borel resummation. I get an imaginary part for my energy. In this case, it's the effective action. But this is not a problem because I know that in the problem there's an instability. I can if I have a constant electric field, then I can create a pair of electron and a positron from the vacuum, and there's a rate for that pair production. And in fact, this imaginary part in this case is proportional to the rate of pair production. Right. So this is for the Euler-Heisenberg effective action, and the similar thing also happens in the, for example, another example I spoke was the scalar on a de Sitter space that also has a singularity here, and in fact in de Sitter space there's a pair production which is similar to Euler-Heisenberg. In fact, another example was the Stark effect. It's the same now. That's not pair production, but it's ionization. So I can knock off an electron if I apply an electric field. And cubic oscillator, there's an instability. So if I take a cubic oscillator, so I'm making a perturbative expansion here. But there is a I can tunnel from this local minimum down here, and this is also an instability in the problem, and this is basically known as the false vacuum decay, and I just kept going and going. These are all systems with instabilities, and this imaginary part is actually something physical. It tells me that there, it tells me something physical. However, there were two other examples that I gave, which has these poles and or singularities in the Borel plane, but nevertheless are stable. Those two, there are actually many examples, but I would like to concentrate on two, which is the double well. So I'm doing perturbation theory here. There's no instability, there's no false vacuum decay or anything like that. Nevertheless, if I do the same type of analysis in the perturbative theory, I will I will hit a pole here. Same story happens in the periodic potential. I do perturbation theory, as I will show. The series is asymptotic, and furthermore, there is again a singularity, actually many singularities in the Borel plane, but again there is no instability, so I have to interpret those singularities, and I have to resolve this issue because in these problems the ground state energy or any energy level that I compute has to be real. There's no pair production or anything like that. Okay, so very well, and then the next thing I realize is that I say, hey, wait a second. This is just a perturbative expansion, but I know that this is not the whole story, right? So, in double well, I know that. If I keep breaking the chalk. So I have a spectrum like this, or in the periodic potential, I have some energy levels But these, I know that there are these levels, if I take into account the contributions that come from tunneling from this vacuum to this vacuum, these levels split. They split into two, and the distance is, and the difference between these two levels. So one of them is an eigen. So in perturbation theory, there's a degeneracy. The system has a symmetry if I reflect as a parity symmetry. If I reflect from the middle, it's a symmetry of the problem, and each eigenstate is actually degenerate. There's a parity odd eigenstate and a parity even eigenstate, which have the same energy perturbatively, but non-perturbatively they split, and the parity odd state has a slightly larger energy than the parity even state, and the difference between the energies goes as I over H bar. Now I switch my notation, and instead of a small coupling G, I will use H bar from now on. And this is basically the level splitting. In the periodic case, what happens is that it doesn't split into two states, but it splits into a band. And the energy spectrum is now for each of these states split into a band. And the width of the band is again exponentially small, and it's parameterized by some angle, which is called the Bloch angle. And when theta equals zero or pi denotes either this edge or this edge, and these are the even or odd parity states. But now I have all the states in between. So,
Do you have a band?
This is because there can be many tunnelings and so on. I will explain this in detail. This is more like a teaser now. And so this is this is all fine, but still these are real quantities. I still haven't answered this question: what happens with the imaginary part? So that happens at So one more thing. So this is an action. This is this I will denote as the instanton action. So what is it? This is a configuration which has. Let me write generally what the action is. So I'm working in Euclidean space, and my Lagrangian is kinetic term plus the potential term. Right. So I can write this as square root of 2v squared dt plus dq of 2v. And so this is a positive quantity, and any configuration will have an action which is bounded from below by this, bounded by this, because this is a positive, this piece, this is a positive contribution. So an instanton is a configuration where this is zero, and this is what I call the instanton action, and this integral is from Q0 to Q1, where Q0 is one of the minimum and Q1 is the other minimum. So this describes these tunneling processes, and these are configurations. If you think in terms of the path integral, these configurations enter into the path integral, and they so this is SI, and in the path integral they are weighted with 1 over h bar, and in the Euclidean space the measure is positive, and this is the contribution that I pick up from these events. So this is all very nice. But as I said, I still haven't answered the actual question. And the answer occurs in the what I call the two instanton sector. So now, now in the limit where my small coupling is small, so I will refine this condition in a little bit. These configurations are rare events in the path integral, and now I can, in Euclidean space, consider a gas of the, all these events, all the instantons and one instanton or two instantons or three and four and so on, and each of them will be weighted by their action in the path integral, and when H bar is small, the contributions of multi-instantons are exponentially small. However, now if I go to the two instanton level, and when I try to compute the contribution, so of the energy of an event where I denote by II bar, and I denotes a tunneling event from one minimum to another, and I bar denotes another tunneling event which is going backwards. So this event which I call as II bar is an event where I tunnel and come back. And now I consider all the configurations which does this, and that is not a well-defined problem. In the picture that I described, if I consider these as a dilute gas, I can decrease my action when I take these instanton and anti-instanton, and they come together. The action increases, and the contribution of these events to the path integral is actually problematic. And when I try to compute that integral, I end up with a problem which looks similar to this, and I get also an imaginary ambiguity. So I don't want to discuss the details of this picture because I'm gonna show this from a different perspective. Yes.
Why interaction with instanton gives you delta E? As cleanly as you can.
Yes. Yes. So okay. Let me explain that. This. So let me consider the ground state. So I can. So I can write. So start from a partition function. So these are, and let me consider the case where let me go to finite temperature where this path integral the measure is all the configurations which are periodic. Beta, and the ground state energy is basically beta goes to zero. Sorry, 1/beta log of z. This is just statistical mechanics, and so if from this argument, you see that the action of these events are so it's some number which I denoted by SI, and in the path integral, they will be weighted by e to the minus SI over h bar. So there will be many terms, of course, in the path integral, but there will be terms which are weighted by the instanton action. And so there's stuff plus this. And once I extract the energy from the path integral, expand the log and so on, these terms will follow through. OK? Yes.
This sort of assumes, I guess, that all the contributions come from just turbing around critical points. I mean, you have everything in between that also that has energy between the ground state and stuff there, but somehow it, since it's not near a critical point, it's sort of ignored it. I mean, this sort of looks like a localization.
Not really, because okay, so this contribution will have some series in H bar, and those will come from all the all the fluctuations around the saddle point. This is basically the contribution from the saddle point, but there's each of these contributions will have its own divergent series. But I will come to that. Okay, so the instanton gas picture also has an inherent problem. And as I said, once you try to extract the energy, you encounter a similar problem. And 2Si over H bar times C20. And it turns out the ambiguity that comes from the instanton picture that shows up in the two instanton level, which is this imaginary ambiguity, is exactly the same ambiguity that I encountered here with an opposite sign. If I follow the same prescription for going above or below, this I can do this by giving a small imaginary part to H bar, and they exactly cancel each other. So up to three instanton order, this Borel-Riessand expression for the energy plus this two instanton contribution has no ambiguity and it's real. So I'm happy. This was the two instanton ambiguity plus the perturbative ambiguity no ambiguity. So this was discussed by several people, and I will call this BZJ, Bogomolny, and Zinjostan. These are the two people who really advocated for, they really showed these cancellations and so on. So now the statement is that this happens in every order. This contribution, this one instanton contribution, multiplies another series, H bar squared and so on. This is also an asymptotic series, and this has the same problem as this one, as like the perturbative one. There's also some imaginary ambiguity if I try to Borel some, and this ambiguity will be cured by now. So it goes on and on. So the ambiguity of I plus the that comes from and if you remember, the ambiguity of the perturbation theory was at the order of two instantons. The ambiguity of the one instanton contribution will be at the order of three instantons, and that will be canceled by I bar. No ambiguity. So I will refine all these statements and so on. So this is what I would like to show using WKB, at least in one example, and the construction works for a class of potentials, but I find it easier to work with examples. Okay, and now I should what I should have done was to start with not just the perturbation series, but a series which looks like this. So what I should have done, okay, E. I will now put a, yes.
So H log H transform, you do not see them when you use it.
this is the formula that I'm just about to write. Yes. Yes. So I should refine my perturbation series. 1, 2, 3, 4. So I have 4 summations. So Cn, which notation did I use? N, K, L, M. Okay, so N goes from 0 to infinity. K goes from 0 to infinity. And L goes from 0 to K minus 1. And M goes from 0 to infinity. Okay, so I have a perturbative series. So this is just what I wrote here. So these are the instantons. And you see each of the instantons have their own. So if I, for example, stay with k equals 0, then this n k equals 0 and L will describe a perturbative series, and so on and so forth. And this is the answer to your question, L. And so this is basically, I will explain this only, this is the same theta angle here. This only happens for a periodic potential. For a potential like this, instead of this sum, I just have plus minus. It just split things. So this theta basically measures the band. Okay. So so this is what Eckhall calls a trans series. Well, the general trans series have also iterations of these guys, but they don't show up, as you also mentioned. Logs don't show up. Huh? Each of these elements, h, e to the minus h, and log, these are called, in Eckhall's language, transmonomials. And in this language, they all have their own meaning. So these are perturbative fluctuations around each instanton sector. This is what I will denote as the instanton fugacity. It just measures the instanton number. These in the instanton gas picture come from quasi zero modes, which I will not explain. I will derive this in a different way. This M is the topological charge. So this basically, in the case of this example, it measures how many time I jump. This is a you can view this as a winding number. Well, I would like to differ the k and m because, for example, the events that I tunnel and come back have the same fugacity as I go two times, so I denote the instanton number to denote k, but they are different events. They have different topological charge. So you might call it instanton number, but the point is you should distinguish between an instanton and instanton anti instanton. Okay. They both will be suppressed at the same exponential order, but they have a different.
So some people would call it the Fourier mode.
Yeah, and this is the block angle. And if you think in terms of QCD, this is like the theta angle. This is like the topological charge, right? Yes.
I thought you said you were going to explain it, but what's this log business about? How do I see that?
I will explain it from a different perspective, but I don't want to go into the instanton gas picture because that's another lecture. Okay, so one statement is that these coefficients are So there are constraints, actually stringent constraints on CNLKNs. I will make this statement more precise, but this is the whole idea of resurgence. There are different instanton sectors, and each instanton sector have its own perturbative fluctuations plus the logs and so on and so forth. But nevertheless, these coefficients are not independent. In fact, there are very stringent relations between them, and this is what I will loosely call as resurgence. So this was for example, I chose that's why I put these particular numbers here. So if you look at the late terms in the perturbative expansion, you will see the leading terms in the two instanton expansion. So they are related, and the subleading correction to the late term behavior will be the first subleading correction to the two instanton fluctuation, and so on. And but this is not the whole story. There is actually a much more remarkable relation, but I will come to that later. So this is the whole idea of resurgence. Okay, so this was the end of the introduction. So I have to make one more remark, which is that how should I do my remark? Here. So this expansion is a valid expansion in the region where. So this is validity. So this, as I said, this is a small H bar expansion, and it's the smallness is measured to the level number. So this basically condition tells me that this expansion is valid only for those states. Those energies are around here, not all the way there. Okay. So if I go to the somewhere else in the spectrum where has a very different expansion, nevertheless these once the perturbative and non-perturbative sectors of this expansion, which looks nothing like this, are identified, the relations that I will show for these coefficients still hold for this expansion. And this is not an asymptotic expansion. This is a convergent expansion. But yet there is some subtlety which shows up when you take n to infinity, and that gives you a hint that this resurgence structure, which I described for this type of series, which is valid for small h bar, still be valid for very different expansions in some somewhere far away in the spectrum. Once I identify what I call perturbative and non-perturbative correctly. I may not have time to discuss this, though. I would be happy to discuss if I don't have the time later. Okay, so now let me move on to the... what I call a weak coupling expansion. So by the way, another remark is that those who are familiar with gauge theories and so on, this is really I can view this as a toothed coupling, and this would be the large n limit. And in fact, what happens here also shows up in matrix models and so on and so forth. but that's just a remark for now. Maybe I will talk about it, maybe I won't. Okay, so, but now let me, well, section one was the introduction. So, recoupling expansion. And this is where the uniform WKB. Lanter, and this is basically I will explain how you can derive this this expansion and how you can compute these coefficients and what are the relation between these coefficients are. Okay, so and in the back of my mind I will have v equals cosine z, but as I said, some of the construction will be valid for certain class of potentials which I will give the restriction to. Okay, so now let me start with the Schrödinger equation. So I again switched notation and called my energy U. Okay, so now the idea is that so I'm making an expansion near the minimum, and near this minimum, the potential looks like a harmonic oscillator, right? So then I make an ansatz for my wave function, where this nu this d of nu is the parabolic cylinder function. So why on earth I would do such a thing? The reason is that this is a solution to the harmonic oscillator problem. So d nu I will call x. Nu plus a half minus x squared over 4 d nu of x equals 0. So since I'm expanding near the region where the potential looks like a harmonic oscillator, it makes sense to make my ansatz such that in the limit where I have the where I'm in the bottom of the well, I go back to the harmonic oscillator. Okay, that's good. So now I take this ansatz and I know what the differential equation that this parabolic cylinder function satisfies. I put it into my Schrödinger equation. I get something which looks absolutely horrible, but it's okay. 2f squared f prime squared minus 2h bar Okay, so this looks really terrible, this equation. However, let me just keep on going. Actually, I'll just keep this. This is it. Since I'm talking about that. So what I do is I now make an ansatz for my wave function. So now I say this is not an equal sign, this is asymptotic. So this U0 is in, for my example, is just minus 1, this is the value of the potential at the minimum. Cosine is the minimum of cosine is minus 1. So now let me start with something called a local analysis. So I forget that this is a periodic function and so on. I just focus on one of the minima and just do some analysis here. So what do I mean by that? I take this ansatz, plug it here, solve it order by order. This is like WKB, what I would do in ordinary WKB. So I will spare you the details, but at the end of the day, solve for fi and ui recursively. So I generate an expansion for the wave function and the eigenvalue, and what I get is so the u in this expansion of nu of h bar is the actually let me write the first term. So this is h bar nu plus a half plus h bar to the n p of n of nu plus a half n from 2 to infinity. And there's a similar expansion for the wave function, which I'm not going to write. So what is this? This is, well, I started from a harmonic oscillator. No surprise, the leading term is the harmonic oscillator term, nu plus a half. And there are some corrections. What are these corrections? These are some polynomials of nu plus a half of order n, right? So if I identify my nu with an integer, this is really the perturbative expansion. Okay, this is my local analysis here. And as I said, this is a this will be this expansion that I wrote in the beginning of my talk. And these coefficients grow, they're asymptotic, and so on and so forth. Okay, so nu equals n, I get the perturbative expansion. Okay, very well. Now I want to do something more. I want to impose boundary conditions on my wave function. Okay, so that will be now part bill two. By the way, this analysis decomposing the making an ansatz in terms of the parabolic cylinder, solving for the energy eigenvalue. This I can do for any potential which has harmonic minimum. So this doesn't have to be the cosine potential, but the minimum has to be harmonic. All right, very well. So now part two, what I call global analysis. What do you mean?
What if it starts with x to the 4?
Yeah, and then like,
Well, then of course this is. I mean, I can still do this, but this won't be a good approximation, right? Because parabolic cylinder is not a good approximation for the quartic oscillator, and I don't know any special function. This won't be a good way of organizing the expansion.
So if this would just become like oscillator, what is that?
My function, my potential is not just the harmonic oscillator. Right. So this is my ansatz. Instead of my wave function, I put f. So if my potential was just the harmonic oscillator, and this f would have been just z, right? Or with some normalization, but.
Hermite polynomials times.
Here I didn't specify whether this nu is an integer or not. If this nu is an integer, these parabolic cylinder functions become the Hermite polynomials. But this doesn't have to be an integer, and this is the more general solution, actually. Yes. Okay. So now I impose boundary conditions. Okay, and the boundary conditions that I would like to impose is this. So if I go one period, I start from, let's say, psi equals minus pi, one of the minima. I do this analysis. Now I impose my boundary condition. Now, what do? I take this boundary condition. I have this expression. I solve for these recursively the wave functions and the eigenvalues. I plug that here and evaluate not at x equals minus pi, but x equals pi, this wave function. I'm still keeping h bar to be small so that I can make an asymptotic expansion for these parabolic cylinder functions. But now I have to take into account the fact that these are asymptotic. The fact that h bar equals zero, the argument of h bar equals zero is a Stokes line for this parabolic cylinder function. So I have to go a little bit away from that. So I give an argument of h bar plus minus epsilon, right? So now I make an expansion for the parabolic cylinder functions, take into account the small imaginary part, and now they have the following expansion. Okay, so x of nu e to the minus x squared over 4. This is the same plus minus here. So and these are two functions which have asymptotic expansions. So I collected all the stuff here. So F plus is similar, but I don't want to write because it's similar, but the plus sign here. All right. So now what do? Here, these x's are these asymptotic expansions for my wave function. I solve them here recursively. And I impose this boundary condition here. I evaluate all these functions at z equals pi and plug it here to this asymptotic expansion and do some boring algebra. At the end of the day, I arrive something that looks like this. Okay, good. All right. So plug the ansatz into, you call it star, into star. After all the dust settles, I get something that looks very nice. 32 over h bar minus b to the a over 2. All right, so let me explain what these quantities are. B is just a notation for nu plus a half. This was my ansatz. And what is A? So A basically comes from putting all this stuff into there and evaluating it at z equals pi and so on. But it also has a nice meaning. So it shows up A over 2 or minus A over 2. So this is basically right. So this is my instanton action. Right? This is the same thing that I wrote in the beginning of the talk. Now there's a shift, but this just offsets the minimum. Doesn't matter. So this is basically the instanton action divided by h bar plus some series in h bar. Right. So now, what do I do? Now I plug this in here. I solve this equation order by order. Right. So the first thing I learn. So let me start with the first term. This a over 2 goes like 1 over h bar. So this is the most dominant term here. So a over 2. So this is the second dominant term, order 1. This is the third dominant term. This is even more suppressed. So leading order, what I have is just this guy equals 0. What does that mean? That means B, which is nu plus a half, which means nu is an integer. So this has to vanish. So the leading order in the instanton X, this is like the leading order in the instanton exponent. This is my perturbative series. The first thing I learn, nu is an integer. And as I said here, that just generates me my perturbative expansion. Very good. So now I go to one more order. So I'll yes. So this is, okay, fine, good. I know the parabolic cylinder function has this asymptotic expansion, right? And this is my wave function, basically, with this ansatz. So I impose this boundary condition here. This is an equality which has some parabolic. This is a little more complicated than I wrote here, but I don't want to go into details. But basically, what I end up here is some parabolic cylinder function evaluated at z. So these are functions of z. Z equals pi. Is equal to something else, right? So now I take this ansatz. I know what these functions are because I solved them recursively earlier here. So remember, the Schrodinger equation with this ansatz becomes some nonlinear equation. I have this ansatz. I solved order by order recursively. I know what these functions are. So I evaluate them at z equals pi and plug it into this equation, which is an asymptotic expansion here, and do some algebra. What I end up is this. Okay. These are just some expansions. This A has f minus over f plus and so on and so forth. These are like these are expansions that I compute by expanding these guys. All right. So the first thing I learned was nu was integer. That's the perturbative. The next thing is the next.
Another stupid question.
Yeah.
Why do you only have even power of 2? If this were just like a Monarch oscillator, you should have
a polynomial times a Gaussian. But it looks like you only have even polynomials.
If you remember the solution of the harmonic oscillator that causes e to the x squared, so it has a parity symmetry, right? It's not a function of z, it's a function of z squared, right? So in the harmonic oscillator limit, this x is just z, and I have one solution but that's a function of z squared. The fall off is e to the, this is Gaussian. This is basically that. The wave functions are symmetric, which is, as z goes to minus z. Right. The ground state. The ground state. Okay, so. So leading instanton order. I just expand this. This is just perturbative. I learned that mu is an integer. So now one instanton. Now I should take this term and the next term, which is this one. This is still suppressed, right? So now what I learn is this is not equal to zero, but it's something exponentially suppressed, and that means nu is not an integer; it's an integer plus a little bit. What is this little bit? That little bit is. With some fluctuation, of course. So there's some coefficient, h bar, and so on. Okay. Now I had the expression for my energy level. So u of nu of h bar. So I can write this as u evaluated at integer plus this bit plus du dn. So on. So this is the perturbative. This is the one instanton. So actually, if I solve this, there's a cosine theta, because what I do is I just say this expanded around nu is an integer plus a bit is equal to cosine theta times something exponentially small. I took this part to here, and then what I learn is. This nu is an integer plus a bit, and that bit is at the order cosine theta. So this gives me my the one instanton term that I mentioned, e to the si over h bar cosine theta. This is the bandwidth. This is my band. But now I can keep going, right? I can keep expanding this. So.
You don't have here really eigenvalues. What do you? Do you have eigenvalues?
These are eigenvalues. The boundary condition is six here. So
for eigenvalues, really not a bad eigenvalue.
So what I mean by the width of the band is if I change my boundary condition, I will have each theta. This is my band. Each theta will have an eigenvalue, which is along the band. And if I vary theta, I sweep out the band. And these are all the allowed solutions, which are properly normalized, the normalizable.
Is that has to do anything with the continuous spectrum? The width of the band has anything to do with the continuous spectrum?
And this is a continuum. What do you mean?
Maybe that's okay,
good. So now I can just keep doing this. So two instanton. So now my nu is an integer again plus a bit, but now I also take into account this term, And now it's plus this bit is e to the minus si over h bar dot dot plus e to the minus 2si over h bar plus dot dot dot. Because now I'm solving this equation by also keeping this term as well, which is if you look from here, it has this e to the minus 2 over si. This is the leading, this is the subleading, this is the sub-subleading. And then up to 2 instanton order, my true energy will be, let me call this this u zero. This just means that the energy, the expression for the energy that I obtained by solving recursively the WKB equations, the form of this u zero of n. Let me call it b. Remember, this is h bar b plus n from 2 to infinity h bar to the n pn of b. These are just polynomials. What I do is I expand this around b is an integer plus a bit, and then this bit has the multi-instanton corrections. I plug that here. My true energy will be u0 evaluated at an integer plus delta nu du0 dn plus 1 over 2 d nu squared du0 d squared. And the pattern is clear. I can just keep on doing this. I just make it. I expand this this equation order by order around an integer for nu. I then solve it for nu. I plug that into this expression and expand this to the same order to whatever order I want in the instanton expansion. By doing that, I generate. I generate this. So the block stuff just comes from this cosine. So this I could have written this as a sum over cosines instead of a Fourier mode. So it doesn't matter. And where do the logs come from? The logs come from just expanding the gamma function. Where does the imaginary part come from? I said that there were some ambiguities in the perturbative expansion, which are then cured by some imaginary part that comes from the two instanton expansion. Where does this imaginary part come from? It comes from this. So this b, right, is so there's a nu plus a half. So there's a plus minus I pi over 2. This is my imaginary part. And where does that come from? That comes from because the h bar was a Stokes line, so I had to go either above or below. That's this plus minus. And it why does it show up in the two instanton sector? Because it shows up here. This is the two instanton. It will keep showing up in the higher orders, but I don't see it in the one instanton order because this is suppressed. The one instanton order is just this. I can just write a small code. I can just generate all these terms and so on and so forth. Very good. So now I would like to make a couple of remarks. I had the expression for the two instanton, which I couldn't find anywhere in the literature, but I'll skip that because I don't want to write long equations and bore you. But I can give it if anyone is interested. But I have some demonstration. with this method. By the way, this equation that I just erased was conjectured by Zinjastan and Jantura. This is what they call the exact quantization condition. It was a conjecture. But by this method, you can actually show it, and you can actually calculate it. And another thing is that as I said, for any potential which has harmonic minima, the local part of the analysis will follow, but the boundary conditions will be different for every potential. For double well, it's going to be different. If I have some more complicated function, it's going to be different. But this analysis will go through. So for the periodic potential, these are actual numbers. So n, 2si the power n. So this is the late terms in the perturbative series. So these are so you can calculate these independently from, let's say, some techniques which were developed by Bender and Wu in the late 60s and so on. This can be, as I said, completely independently it can be calculated. And from this analysis, it's very easy to generate, as I said, the multi-instanton terms. And the imaginary part of the two-instanton sector, there's this. These are the same numbers, right? And this is the leading terms in the two instanton expansion. These are the late terms in the perturbative expansion. So this is a demonstration of what I just said earlier. So now, before I, how much time do I left? It was 40.
You have 20 minutes.
20 minutes. Okay, very good. Very good. Okay, so I can make my main statement. All right, so then let me just draw a cartoon. So this is the resurgence triangle.
Just a question?
Yes.
So this observation here is not, you're not, this is not an example of some other.
No. This is this is just the actual coefficients for my example, the double well. Oh, sorry, the periodic potential material. So these numbers can be, as I said, can be calculated by other means, without referring to this mechanism. There are some papers, and these numbers are calculated from what I just described. From the method that I just described, and as I said, for the ambiguity cancellations to happen, this had to be true. These numbers had to match, so that when I try to Borel sum, this late order behavior will dictate where my poles are, and this is the imaginary part. So so in order for those two ambiguities to cancel, really these numbers had to be the same. So that's the demonstration that it works in this case.
What are those numbers? What sequence is it?
What sequence is it? I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, it's a good question.
Did you put the next few in the encyclopedia? Do you get anything?
I didn't get anything. Yes. All right. Resurgence triangle. So let me denote the perturbative series as, so this is an abuse of notation, but by this function f, and I will explain what these numbers are. So this is just the contribution to the energy eigenvalue from the perturbative vacuum. This is an ambiguous series, this is a asymptotic series which have ambiguities in the Borel plane. Good. So now let me go one step down and go to one instanton. This xi is my instanton fugacity. It's basically something proportional to e to the s I over h bar. There are some powers of H bar and so on, but it basically measures the instanton suppression. This is my instanton fugacity, and this comes with an so this is an this is what I would call an instanton with a charge minus one. This is an anti-instanton, and likewise, there's an instanton e to the I. So basically, what enters into the energy level is this plus that, and that's a real number. But these phases will be important. Okay. So then, at the two instanton level, I have c squared f zero, f two zero. So this is the instanton suppression. This is the topological charge. You can think of this way. This is topological charge minus one. These are basically the. Actually, maybe I don't even need to do this, because I explicitly put the phases. So this basically denotes the instanton order, and each instanton order is further graded into the topological charge. Right. So now I have here c squared e to the minus two I. But I'm sorry. I need these because these are different functions, of course. That was silly. All right. Okay. Here and c squared e to the two I theta f two two, and this is two zero. And let me just write the three. You can. Okay. So then the ambiguity cancellations happen in a graded way. What do I mean by that? So the ambiguities that come from this series are cured by the ambiguities that come from this series to leading order. This has ambiguities and this has further ambiguities. Those are canceled by the higher order terms. And this goes on and on. Now, there are ambiguities in this series. This is cured by the term that I didn't write here, which is basically c cubed e to the minus I theta f 3 minus 1. So there's also c cubed e to the minus 3 I theta f 1 minus 3, and so on. Let me use a different color. So these are cured by this. And this column doesn't include this guy here, because this is a different topological charge than this. They can't talk to each other. And so this guy, likewise, talks to here, c cubed e to the plus I theta f 3 1, and so on. So so there's c. So there's a c to the 4 f to the 4 0. And so on. So each of these series, these are perturbative fluctuations around, let's say this is a perturbative fluctuations around an instanton with topological charge 2. The ambiguities of this guy will be cured by the term that I didn't write here, which is c to the 4 e to the 2 I theta f 4 2. And there's another one, c to the 4 e to the 4 I theta, and so on. So there's a type of selection rule, basically. And then the statement is that each of these series, the sum of each of these series are ambiguity free. So I can take this sector, for example. I sum this. This is going to be an unambiguous series. I can change my boundary condition and start with this series. This is going to be ambiguity free. And so on. So these sectors don't talk to each other in terms of ambiguity cancellation. All right. So in the last minutes, I would like to make some more remarks. So the way it works is that the late terms of as I wrote here, the late terms of this expansion are related to the early terms of this expansion, and so on and so forth. But something much more is true. And this is really remarkable. There are even much more strict relations between these coefficients. And now that I would like to talk about that. So All right. So as I said, there are relations between late order terms here and early terms here, but so I will say perturbative, non-perturbative connection. This is, and so in this case, MP will be encoded completely in P. Okay, so there is a very simple relation between, I call it U0 of B, divided by B. So this was discovered by Dunnan and Saul, and the way it was discovered by, was that they observed some pattern in these coefficients, and by playing around, they realized that they basically satisfy this. This equation. Let me remind you what these are. So this A, basically, a function. It's a series. I just erased, but it starts with 1/h bar as the S instanton divided by 1/h bar plus some higher order corrections, and those higher order corrections basically encode the perturbative fluctuations around an instanton, and those are basically that A function generates these numbers, right? So what is this U0 of B? That's just the perturbative series. That's just the series I also erased, but this is just perturbative. Yes, yes, but I don't impose B as an integer. I just view that as I don't impose the condition that B is an integer. But this series, this is basically as I said, H bar B plus to the n and some polynomials of B, and this is very easy to compute. This is just the perturbative expansion. You don't need to do any instanton analysis whatsoever. This is just Rayleigh-Schrödinger perturbation theory. There are some recursion relations that you can use and so on. This is completely perturbative. Oh, I wrote H bar. Interesting. That would be an interesting thing. Yes. And what this equation says is that these coefficients, these perturbative coefficients, and the coefficients of the instanton expansion, these are coefficients with different k labels over there, are related in a super simple fashion. And in order to reconstruct the perturbative series, the whole trans series, all I need to do is this perturbative expansion. From that, I can construct the A. Once I know the A, I can construct this whole thing by just expanding some gamma functions and so on and so forth.
Sorry, so was B the natural? B was not the. Can you remind us again what is B?
So B was the ansatz that I made and for my wave function. At that level, at the perturbative level, it's unspecified, and then I had to impose the boundary conditions. To get an equation that has that was over there, which had the gamma functions and so on. And from that I can solve B order by order. The first thing I learn is B is an integer plus a half, then plus a bit, and so on. But all that just follows from the expansion of the parabolic cylinder functions. All the information about the potential is encoded into here, but I don't need to do all this. I just need to solve this. This is only true for the cosine potential, by the way. for different potentials. This is one of the things that we're trying to understand. So how much time do I left?
5 minutes.
Okay. In the 5 minutes, I would like to give another alternative perspective on this equation. And since the title of the conference is Geometry and Physics, it will contain some amount of geometry. 5 minutes. Okay, very good. So now let me go back to the old Bohr-Sommerfeld WKB expansion. So now I make this ansatz e to the minus s over h bar. Then I get the instead of this horrible nonlinear equation, I get something even something simpler. This Riccati equation, right? Prime square h bar is double prime equals zero. So now I define two WKB cycles. So this is so again, these S's are asymptotic expansions of H bar. The first few terms, the first two terms, are this. So the leading term is 2 u minus v dz. There's a H bar, so it goes as H bar squared over 64. V prime u minus v to the 5 halves. And so on, and for the second period, the integrands are the same, but so this is over. Let me call it gamma one, gamma two, gamma two, gamma one. These are cycles over different turning points, basically. So so then let me call the leading term a zero. The function of u, and this a zero dual is a function of u. So for the periodic potential, the spectral curve is a genus one torus. And these are cycles, the two cycles over the torus, and for those who are familiar with gauge theories, these are basically the zeroth order cycles are basically the Cyber-Quinton differentials, right? On a torus, these two cycles satisfy the Riemann bilinear identity, and where I define. Riemann bilinear identity gives me for these cycles that I will denote d a 0 u 2 minus so basically what this is I over 2 times the instanton action divided by the period. So this is the classical period of the underlying harmonic oscillator, which is in my normalization is just 2 pi, and this is the instanton action. This is also true, for example, if I took the double well, that the spectral curve of a double well is also a genus one torus, and this is true once I identify the instanton action is some different number, but nevertheless, this equation is true. So this equation is basically this equation written in a different way, but not quite, because this is just the leading term. So what Gerald and I was able to show was this is leading order in H bar. So what I mean by this is it's just the leading order in H bar of this equation. So but you can make this work to all orders. And notice that the right-hand side didn't change. So this you can view this as some sort of a flux over the torus. And even when I include the H-bar deformation, these H-bar corrections don't change the total flux. And this is true. And this is basically the same. It's basically the same equations modulo converting this A and B to A and A dual, which I didn't have time to explain, but I would be happy to if anyone asks. So this is me and Gerald. And this also, again, as I said, this is also true for the double well as well. And our conjecture is that this is true for any potential spectral curve as a genus one. Genus one surface. There is a generalization of this, the bilinear identity for higher genus surfaces. That's still something that we're thinking about. What happens to this equation if you have multiple periods, not just two, per torus? In terms of quantum mechanics, this is pretty interesting. This geometrical way of thinking says that the perturbation theory for the perturbation theory and the non-perturbative physics of the Mathieu equation, those relations are exactly the same in, let's say, a double well, which has a completely different spectrum. But once you identify what these objects are, the cycles, then the resurgence structure of Mathieu and double well, or whichever genus one, whichever potential spectral curve is a genus one surface, is the same. Oh, these will be completely different. Actually, you can do more. You can put the spectral curve into the what's called the Weierstrass stress form, and basically all the information about the potential and so on will be encoded in the G2 and G3, and from that you can recover the spectral information. But the conjecture is this will still be true, but there are some subtleties in the analysis, but on that note, I would like to stop here. I didn't have a chance to explain what happens in stroke coupling, but I would be happy to. So I'll just say it in words. I can go to anywhere in the spectrum, basically, and if I look at those states which are high up in the spectrum, way above the barrier, then the spectrum looks completely different. It's basically degenerate perturbation theory, and as I go to the limit where n, the level number going to infinity, the degeneracies kick in at larger and larger n, and they look like even though it's a perturbation theory, they look like they're non-perturbative objects, and they can be identified with the dual cycle, a dual, and those are responsible for high up in the spectrum. Instead of exponentially small bands, I have exponentially small gaps. I have a spectrum, continuous spectrum with tiny gaps, and those uh, the, 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 this this dual cycle, which is basically which describes the instanton and the decoupling expansion and the bandwidth there. Basically encodes information about the small gaps. And in cyberquantum, there's an interesting analogy. So in terms of quantum mechanics, near the recoupling, you have, so in the recoupling expansion, which is described by this trans-series, basically you have tightly bound states with a harmonic oscillator, and there's some little band splitting and so on, but they're highly localized. High up in the spectrum, you have plane waves. And this picture seems to capture both of these degrees of freedom in cyberquantum theory. Near the bottom of the well, you have the ions, and high up in the spectrum, you have some W bosons. And this equation seems to capture all the changes in degrees of freedom. It's an interesting analogy between quantum mechanics and case theories. All right, thank you so much. And I would like to again thank all the organizers, since I'm the last speaker, for the wonderful conference. I learned a lot, and it was a pleasure being here. Thank you.